Just a quick warning before we start this episode. This episode will talk about some very dark issues. So here is a content warning for discussions about suicide and SA. And we will be making spoilers for Vampire Dormitory. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Marxist Clover, the podcast where we take a critical and often uncritical look at anime. I'm your host, Eric Hobbs-Bond, and here's my co-host, the Engels Next Door. How are you doing, Engels?
Hello, I'm doing good. I learned that today is an anniversary of one of the most significant events. The King Crimson album Red turns 50 years old. That's, of course, what I'm talking about. There's nothing else significant in world events coming up.
Yay.
Very great album. Never listened to it. Red, great song, great instrumental. Starless, really good. This isn't about anime, but I thought about it because I gave it to my mom for her 50th birthday.
I mean, Yes had their anime moment with JoJo.
Yes, did have their anime moment with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
So we really need...
With Roundabout.
So we really need a King Crimson moment in anime.
Well, to be fair, King Crimson is the name of one of the stands in JoJo.
Oh.
So technically they do. And there was a moment where it did seem like Robert Fripp actually commented. The bassist and guitarist King Crimson did comment talking about stand in a way. It was really weird. Yeah. And this is a whole different sub-universe of talking about how weird Robert Fripp is. Also, you found a way of connecting this to anime. But yeah, there's a bunch of references.
Yes. We'll hear more about this in Engel's other podcast this week in Robert Fripp and King Crimson.
Oh, God. Oh, I don't know if I want to do that. But yeah, no, it's a good time. How are you doing?
Huh?
What have you been up to?
Doing well. Haven't really caught up on any of the new anime, but I heard you've got some news.
I have. I saw on the news that Kazuyuki Yao, who voices Frankie and other characters, has to step away from One Piece. The Japanese actor has stepped away because of health issues.
Truly a sad day.
Which is truly a sad day. He's being replaced by somebody. Don't know. I haven't really watched the One Piece subbed in a while. We'll talk about that some other time, my adventures in One Piece. But Yao-san, we want to bring him up because, one, we are eventually going to be talking about a Gundam protagonist voice actor in a different show later on. Because I don't know if you knew this, but Yao-san is the voice actor of the Mobile Suit Gundam Double Zeta. So
no way.
He voices Judo Ashita. Yeah. But we once watched a show back in the day that neither of us probably remember anything about it, except called Kyosogiga. So we were watching the show, and then partway through the show, the voice actors, like two of the main female voice actors in the show, just start doing a tour of the area where the show is filmed. Kyoto? What is it?
Kyoto, yeah.
Is it in Kyoto?
I'm pretty sure it's Kyoto.
Yeah, and
so it's
halfway through the episode.
It's like, it's just a live action episode, all of a sudden, a couple episodes in, with just the voice actors.
And Yao-san appears halfway through the episode.
And boy, he appears. Yes.
Yeah, and he just feels like the most eclectic, weird guy I've ever seen, where the female voice actors are really prim and proper, but he shows up and he's like, hey, it's me, Yao-san. It's like, who is this silver haired fox? I mean, he was a good looking guy.
He's really good looking. I don't think he's ever been
fashionable.
Not amazing looking.
Yeah.
And his legs.
Oh yeah, he had really nice
legs. He was showing a promiscuous amount of legs through his yukata.
Yeah, no, he definitely, I don't even really remember what he does in that show, but I remember being like, God, What an episode. There's another anime that also does something like this, that's not Kenichi Yao-san, called Just Because, that has like the main four characters basically in this, going to places that the show also was based off of. I'm not going to lie, Just Because is not a very good show. I think I only bought it on sale because it reminded me of that ridiculous episode in Kyosukiga.
And the thing about this show is, like, we don't remember anything about it except for Yao-san and what an impression Yao-san gave us.
Yeah, and the circle of the architecture.
There was a circular window that was talked about in depth quite well.
Yeah, was it Yao-san that talked about it?
Or Yao-san was definitely in the scene.
Yes, he was definitely. It was just really funny that he showed up.
If you look back at his back catalog of photos, like, there's some great Yao-san photos that go way back.
There are. He is fashionable.
Oh, he's super
fashionable. It's very funny. Very, very cool. I recommend everybody who's watched One Piece has heard his voice as Franky, has had to sit through one of the greatest conversations of all time about being hard-boiled and against the guy in the diaper, whose name I don't remember. Or I think he was like a Don or something. Oh, it was really good. I really love... Franky's fun. Franky's a weird character. Ace Ventura, think Oda put a lot of... I may have heard just basically kind of created Franky just so Yao-san could voice him. I mean, that might not be true.
In our headcanon, it's true. Everything's for Yao-san.
Everything's for Yao-san. I don't know. I'm sad. I hope he gets better.
Yeah, we're wishing good health to Yao-san. I hope he feels better. And we want to see more of him. Okay, Vampire Dormitory. What a show.
What a show. So we watched this a while back. We both watched this. What does the show have? If you are in the theater scene, it has a very funny opening with Jazz Square dancing.
The Jazz Square is pretty amazing.
Let's just start out with the OP of the show. So OP of the show is kind of bad, but I know exactly what it sounds like. Like, I can remember how it sounds. And I think I did watch the OP. That is something very rare for me, that I watch the openings of anime after a few listens. But I did watch it just for that Jazz Square opening and her carrying the cat.
If you don't know and you're not like a theater kid, which neither of us are, but we know all the theater kids.
Yeah, we do.
The Jazz Square looks very funky, particularly at such a slow tempo as in this opening.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty funny.
It's just like they just casually stepping
in a like, square.
Yeah.
You move to one corner, then you move your feet to another corner, and then you move to another corner, then another corner, and then you move back to the beginning of the corner. You create a Jazz Square.
And our main...
There is an evil Jazz Square, but they don't do the evil Jazz Square. It would have been really funny in one of the episodes in one of the plot points of the show, that if she would have done an evil Jazz Square, or he, more on that as we get to it.
Yeah, the main character's holding a cat while doing the Jazz Square, and it's just a ridiculous looking scene that's so bad, it's amazing.
It's pretty bad. And some of our listeners might be like, what is the show about?
That's a good question. I don't know if we knew what the show was about until halfway through.
So, I watched this the first episode. I remember telling Hallspawn, it is Orin High School Host Club with vampires. And boy howdy, was I wrong what this show was about. It is not Orin High School Host Club with vampires. This show is about a girl who's an orphan, and in the first episode, almost dies.
Yes.
The show makes it seem like she's about to kill herself.
Yes, and then she decides not to, but then she slips in. Dilly dies anyway.
Well, if you wonder what the girl's called, her name is Nito, and she's saved by a vampire named Ruka. And the show is about their torrid love affair, if you could call it that.
So let's go to the beginning of the first episode. So Mito is an orphan who has been kind of passed around different extended family members and not really welcomed by any of them. And at the moment, she's now a teenager who's just kind of cast out onto the street. And we first meet her getting fired from her job at a ramen place.
Yeah. For attracting young women.
Yes.
And that not being the vibe of this ramen shop, that we don't like, that this used to be a ramen shop where only a few customers come in. They're all old men of the same demographic. And now she's coming in here, ruining.
Yes, so Mito is a very Bishonen looking person.
Very androgynous.
Very androgynous. Short hair. Yeah, people just think she's a really pretty boy.
Yeah.
And so the women have flocked to this bar. And it's not just that the manager fired her, but the men who are displeased with her bringing in all these women are like standing right there, shaking their head. Yeah. In approval of her getting fired as this is happening?
Yeah. I also think there's another detail where she was also sleeping there at times.
That's true. But I feel like it kind of makes the owner look better, because otherwise it looks like he's just cruel, not letting her stay there when she's homeless.
Yeah.
But this is like, oh no, yeah. I have a business reason to fire you.
Yeah. A great business reason.
Which is, it does not fit the sexuality off the bar.
No.
And I looked at the scene again, and the name of the ramen shop is Man's Generation.
No way, really?
Yes.
No! No way! So, is there like a K-pop group that we don't know about that is Men's Generation? And this is like a fan bar of Men's Generation?
Gosh, I wonder if the young K-pop stans listening even know about Girls' Generation.
I mean, Girls' Generation were old when we were like pseudo K-pop fans.
Very pseudo.
We've been to a Blackpink concert. They're old. It was fun. One of the greatest concerts that both of us have been to.
It was incredible.
We had nothing bad to say about that Blackpink concert.
No.
So we were saying, you're making fun of K-pop. We're not. Are we going to make fun of that time where Choa from Ace of Angels says Kim Jong-un and it's really weird?
And she looks like she's being date-raped almost?
Yeah. That was a little weird.
We're trying to
date ourselves even more.
Yes.
But that's not what we're talking about. So it's called Men's Generation?
Yes, which really leads credence to the theory that this bar was created as a place for men to be in men's company.
Yeah, in like a not gay way either. The more we'll talk about the show.
This reminded me of a quote by a Japanese filmmaker, Oshima Nagisa.
Uh-huh.
And it's a quote that he made when filming his 1999 film, Gohato, which in the English release was translated as Taboo. It was a film about gay Shinsengumi, gay samurai. And here's a quote from Oshima. Erotic relationships fascinate me. I don't believe in any relationship that's not based on eroticism. Why do you think the Japanese businessman stays in the office for so long? Don't tell me it's out of loyalty to the company. He's there because, consciously or unconsciously, he wants to be with other men. End quote. So, I'm not sure if I think that quote is true, but I feel like in the world of this show, I feel like that explains just what is happening in this bar. That these salarymen wanted to be in the company of other men.
Mm-hmm.
And a much more heterosexual-based worldview would think No, these men would want a bunch of attractive young women in the space with them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe they just do enjoy being in the presence of men. And there is a certain homoeroticism with that, perhaps. I mean, it would be the only way to really explain this.
Yeah, because, like, I think this bar was probably going to make money while she was working there.
Yeah, like, bars do this all the time, where they do the, like, the girls' nights to attract more young women to come to the bar, because that in turn will attract more male customers, and it feels very seedy and all, but, you know, it obviously works as a business ploy.
You know, a quick aside, so I don't know if I brought this up, because I always thought women's night, like, men couldn't be there. I think when we talked about this some other time, I'm like, oh my god, that's so obvious. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
So that kind of blew my mind when you brought it up a while back. I'm not much of a drinker, so this is why this kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, so if the bar was purely going for profit, this was a win-win situation.
Yeah.
Because, yes, maybe those old salarymen wouldn't show up, but plenty of other men would. Mm-hmm. But considering the ramen shop is named Man's Generation, I do feel like the owner created this
safe space.
Yeah, the safe space. The space that's just pure masculine homoeroticism. Or just, I think that's a word for just wanting the same gender in your platonic relationships.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he just wanted a space like that. And he has attracted a clientele who also wants that. And that is more important to him and his clientele than the actual business of this.
Yeah. And for some reason, when you watch this show, it is the most important part of the show. Because so much of this show cycles its way back into this conversation. Yes. And it's so strange.
This is a show about sexuality and gender. And in a weird way that we didn't really expect, opening scene was kind of a thesis statement.
So, this show is super weird. So, why we said this is Orin High School Host Club is that the main girl hides her gender throughout most of this show.
And it's never explained why.
No, not at all. And the thing is that, like, she is just an absurdly pleasant character, kind of has Toru Honda energy, and I feel the show almost tried to do its Toru Honda type of way of doing it for when you meet Toru Honda in Fruits Basket. She is homeless as well and just living in a tent in the forest. And it's really, but that's, like, really absurd, and, like, the only reason she's living that is that I think she thinks that she'll be fine for that for a few weeks, because I don't think that was something that was going to happen forever. Because I think they're remodeling the house.
Yes.
And then she was going to move back. This is like, no, she's homeless. And the thing is that
she's homeless and penniless. She wasn't even paid her last paycheck when she was fired.
Really?
Yes.
That's so dumb. That's so awful. What is wrong with this, man? Also, because, like, in the late 2000s way of saying, there is no homo energy at the Men's Generation bar, from what I remember, where it's not like a gay bar. It's just, you hang out with dudes.
It's just very straight-cut Japanese businessmen, middle-aged, hanging out together.
Yeah.
And I will say about that they don't explain why she hides her gender. Like,
no, not at all.
There doesn't need to be a reason why your gender expression is that. So, yes, I mean, I guess you don't need to explain it. Like, with Orin High School Host Club, Haruhi basically just keeps short hair for convenience and just finds it more convenient to navigate the world as looking like a man. And yeah, like, Mito doesn't need to have a reason why, but in the context of the show, it does feel like it's missing.
It really does. And the show also, I know not every show has to be gritty, but the show is like, it's just needlessly strange about why no one in her family wants to, like, sees her as a burden. Oh my god, her parents died in a house fire when she was a child? Oh, wow, I forgot about that aspect, that her parents died in a house fire.
And this comes to the interesting comparison with Toru Honda from Fruits Basket. The idea of these kids who had these awful childhoods,
yeah,
being just, like, pure angelic people?
Yeah.
Who are not damaged at all and are just very...
No.
Freely giving?
Like, to the point, because we will get... We were going to talk more about, like, too giving. Like, way too giving.
Like, children who are that badly mistreated have walls up trying to protect themselves because that's kind of what they had to do to survive.
Like, she doesn't have, like, an edge. She also doesn't really feel like she was going to school before this.
Yeah.
In the beginning. As well. Also, she's like, in... The case of Toru Honda, that Toru Honda had friends and had friends for
that's
a long
true.
Time.
That's true. She did have a support network for her.
Yeah. Where I don't feel Mito has any friends. And there is still a major argument that she makes not a single friend in this whole show.
That's the gay couple.
Right. I forgot about those two characters. Yeah. That's true. It's true. Not all women have to be friends with women. Not all women have to be friends with women. Like, why don't you have any same-sex friends? Wait, technically, he does, at one point, have same-sex friends.
That's true. That is very true.
No, I agree with you on the damage part. And I think that's the problem is, like, you know, there's a lot of shoujo I like that is just needlessly, like, knows how to get to the root cause of, like, trauma and stuff and actually talks about trauma in an interesting way that is compelling and interesting to me. I think Fruits Basket does a great job of this. I think even at times, like, Cardcaptor Sakura, we call it Sakura for the
dub. The dub is amazing.
For this weird dub that we watched back in the day. But... Like, I think the ways that it handles, like, a lot of moments in that show are so good. I'll say, like, it's very sloppy at times. Like, even Boys Over Flowers is very sloppy. There's a sloppiness and traumatic of a lot of the 90s shoujo that we will kind of talk about maybe some other time. Where, I'm not saying everything has to be overdramatic and everything has to be this very beautiful, sad adventure. There is that weird haircutting manga that you and I glanced off in the Viz app a while back.
Beauty Pop.
That one is really weird and strange in itself. But yeah, for this, it's just like, this show having some edge of some sort, I think really would have added a lot to this show.
I think with creating a character, sometimes people want to create a character and have it two ways. Like, they want the...
Yeah.
Really sad, melodramatic, sympathetic backstory. And you also want this kind of unblemished, innocent...
Flower.
Yeah. And that's not really how the world works. Because if you haven't had a hard life, you learn skills to get you through those times.
And, like, the thing is that it would have been really fun if they would have brought up the fact that at different times that she would have been able to maybe... survive, like her survival skills. You know, I love in Urumakun, the demon one where
Welcome to
Urumakun,
Demon School.
Yeah, Urumakun. Like, he has all these eclectic talents that he has gained from, and that gives some really funny backstory.
Yes, that's a great job. Because it's like,
yeah,
Urumakun is kind of innocent and just such a decent person. But he has clearly learned from his life. He hasn't just suddenly appeared without his trauma having any impact on him.
Yeah, because there is a big argument in this show that she doesn't have, like, any past, in a way.
Yeah.
Like, at all. There is nothing in the past that has hurt her. I mean, even the part where she tried to, where the show kind of starts off, where she's, like, on a bridge and almost falls off the bridge. She wasn't going to do it.
it looked like.
Right.
At all.
Like, if this was Boys Over Flowers or something, she probably would have done it.
Yeah. But she didn't, which is fine, you know, but I don't want to advocate suicide type of stuff and bridge stuff. I think you, if you're going to do it, you have to earn it. Like, I even think in, like, there's not many things that I've liked that have tackled this really well.
Like,
you know, I'm not even a big fan of it in Oshinoko with Akane. Like, I thought, like, the setup for it was okay, but I just don't like how it went with Oshinoko. I think, weirdly, one of the better suicide things I've watched, I guess, like, we did talk about Not Allowed in This World, like, that one eventually got around to that with how it handled it, because it was weird. No longer allowed in this world. But, like, Welcome to the NHK talks about suicide and, like, but that is made by depressed people who are making depressed jokes. And that is what that show is about.
Yeah.
It's just depressed people making depressed jokes.
That's the thing. It's like, suicide is like essay in that if you're going to bring it up, the story kind of has to be about it, or at least has to have something to say about it.
Yeah.
You can't just bring it up as just another plot element. With those two subjects, yeah, it's just too heavy to just add it in.
I think a lot of the crux of what we are going to talk about, because we actually have more to talk about with this show, this isn't even, like, the weirdest part of this show. We are still, like, in, I would argue, like, the first 3 minutes of this show. And like I said, it's hard to not escape the first 3 minutes of this show. Because her backstory is very sloppy, and her as a character is basically absent. That she's a very reactive character. She is not dynamic in, like, many ways at all. She's constantly reacting to this story.
Yeah, like, yes, a show doesn't need to start with a fully formed backstory, but you do need characters who makes sense as a character that are internally consistent. And
yes.
She just does not look... She just doesn't seem like a real person. Like, she's just not believable as a real person.
No. And I think, like, some of the things they're hinting at is just... Sorry to bring up SA again, but, like, that's, like, the only reason why I could see why she's kind of so androgynous in this show.
Okay, that got really dark.
And kind of... Yeah, I know. But there's, like, an implication to that, it feels like, in this show, where why is she look like a man? Or also the other point is, like, she just likes the way she looks.
Yeah.
And this is the only sense of fashion she has. I mean... I guess she only owns one pair of clothes at the beginning of the story. And maybe, you know what? This is what we are. We hyperfixate on really dumb stuff for fictional stories. You know what? Let us cook on our dumb thoughts here. They may be overcooked and undercooked, whatever you want it to be. But, like, it's just weird how poor this girl is and how this world doesn't have sympathy for her until it does. Even though it doesn't. Because there's one character in the show that's insane. Oh my god. We'll get to that character.
Yes, this podcast is about hyperfixating on things. So
it is about hyperfixating.
This is kind of what
things.
You signed up for.
Yeah.
So actually, let's just get into the insane character.
Okay, so this is a love triangle. Both characters are... So there's two men in this love triangle. Basically, she has to...
Well, two men for now.
She is...
Because they're...
Oh, you're right! Oh my god, that's what you mean by that. Yes, okay. So I think it's more fun that we constantly just keep walking around and not talking about what we're talking about. It's more funny this way for us. Like, I feel we're just keeping you on the edge of your seats. So let's just do some setup before we do this. So she is saved by a vampire named Ruka, who is dumb as a box of rocks. I despise this character to no end. He is an awful romantic lead. I would argue the guy from Studio Apartment Good Lighting, Angel included, is a better romantic lead than Ruka is. And that is a harem main character. And harem main characters, romantic lead characters, are usually awful. I don't like Ruka. He is uninteresting. But he thinks that she's a dude. And he then says, he likes her blood. And he's like, your blood, it's so good. This is our second time we've had to talk about a vampire. This is interesting. But whatever.
Yeah, this is quickly becoming This Week in Vampires.
This Week's in Vampires.
And we don't usually like vampire anime.
No. I like Helsing. But that's about it. Then, since her blood is good and he likes her blood, he doesn't really have to drink a lot of blood. That's one of those vampires, the kind of way of eating their, of sucking their blood and not getting ethically away with it too. So he brings her to his dorm room and it's like, you are now going to be my servant. We are going to live together. But we find out at the end of the episode, I guess secretly, if this was not the most obvious thing, the main character is a girl. And I can understand if you came into the story thinking it's a boy's love.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler, it kind of is. It kind of is. We will talk about that. But, because the main girl is so androgynous that this story makes sense as a boy's love story, in a way. Even though Ruka is not written as a jerk as much as I think he should be for this to work. Because Ruka is also nice, but he's super boring. And that's what makes him awful. Is that, like, he's not as selfish as you would think he would
be. Yeah, so Ruka and Mito engage in this, like, a contract where Mito is Ruka's, like, designated blood source?
Yes. Different from we learned about destined SOs.
Yeah, the reason Ruka is in the human realm is he's supposed to find his destined partner. And every vampire is supposed to have a destined partner that they're fated to be with.
Yeah.
And if you don't find them, you kind of just become like a lifeless husk or like a soulless husk. Yeah. So it's very important that he finds his destined partner, particularly because he needs that in order to become the next king of the vampires. And currently, Ruka's not really interested in the blood of any girls. So he's like, hey, I'm just gonna suck some of Mito's blood until I find someone.
Yeah, and this is where, like, the boys' love plotline kind of comes in, because now it's about Ruka accepting that he is getting feelings for Mito, who he thinks is a dude, but also not fully comprehending it. Other side of this is that he learned that Mito actually is his destined partner.
But he doesn't even consider the possibility because, he thinks Mito's a dude. And the destined partner system is very heterosexual.
Yeah, this
it's
is very
a very heteronormative system of of vampire relationships.
To the point where it's just weird, and this is a very hard show to pick apart because it's just so bizarre, and really the characters are so uninteresting, but like the plot aspects of this show are so juicy and strange and weird. There's like only really one real character in this show. Yeah, so so the one proper character is, there is another person part of the love triangle. He is the cool rider from Grease 2 because he rides a motorcycle, or at least in my brain he does.
if he wore a leather jacket. He's like 1950s cool in like an American sense. Mm. Like he would be in Greece. This is completely fabricated. Like I don't think he wears a leather jacket. I do think he rides a motorcycle. I think that is real, if I am correct.
I don't remember it, but again, I would totally believe it.
So Rent is the other dude. Mm-hmm. He wears a bandage on his face all the time. He has a tragic backstory in that he doesn't like vampires. Even though we found that he's a vampire, he is a human vampire hybrid. And his dad married his mom. And this is where the destined partner stuff is really strange. This is why we wanted to really talk about the destined partner stuff and how heteronormative it is. There is a sense of going into like vampire stories, like in vampire story media, there is like the charming, almost kind of that vampires charm their targets into falling in love with them. There is a heavy implication that the mom, his mom, is like charmed the F
like
out.
She's brainwashed
like all the time. She is properly brainwashed
like
to an insane like level.
She's asked about how does she feel about the fact that she abandoned Vin, she abandoned her son to just go off and elope with Vin's father, the vampire. And when she's asked about how she feels about that, the fact that she did that to her son, she basically says it's all okay when you're with the person you're destined with. And it sounds super creepy, and even the way she says it feels like something is really off, and the anime, at least, does not ever address that.
No, it seems like she's genuinely happy in a way, and no, I guess there's a dub of this, and I am kind of sad we never got to hear the dub side of this before we prepared for this. Because I am interested to see how that whole, like, interaction is in English. Being able to understand. But no, that whole interaction is just weird. Like, the mom just seems, like you said, like a robot. Like, she has no agency as a character. She only exists for the men. I mean, to be fair, I almost feel like the dad does more stuff with his cat than he does with his destined partner.
That is true.
But I really do want to put on this is that this is another part of the problem of this show, is that in that shoujo, I do think at times tackles like some of this stuff, like really weird power dynamics really well in interesting ways sometimes. This is not one of those at all. Like there is a really bad problem in this show of all the men in the show have agency, and all the women in the show do have no agency whatsoever, even the main character. So this is probably the biggest part of the show that we've been alluding to, and why Ren goes to be argued that I still think Ren might be the villain of the year, because even though he kind of says I'm sorry, Ren at one point, because Ren wants to be with Mito. There's been, like, typical, like, love triangle shenanigans. Like, Ren knows that she's a girl.
Yes.
Ruka does not know she's a girl.
And also, while Ruka doesn't know that he loves Mito, Ren is pretty honest with his feelings.
Yeah.
Like, Ren seemed
and
like
Mito
a
kinda gets
really
it.
Nice person. And in a way, like, Ren might be a good person on the inside, but his actions are evil.
He isn't. So this is all happening in the episode that Mito meets the mom for the first time. Because, like, the mom and dad come back from the other world after, like, 10 years.
And the mom and dad basically secretly plan a wedding for Ren to marry Mito so that they can steal the destined partner of Ruka, the next vampire king, and thus make it so that Ren could become the vampire king.
Yes. So Ren does something so insane. He basically kisses her and is able to get a wish and Ren wishes that she is a dude.
Yes, because we find that a Damphir gets a wish on a certain birthday.
On their birthday, or on a certain birthday. And it is still one of the most shocking moments.
Yes.
I've experienced this year in anime. It's so weird.
So to review, Vane and his family tried to force a wedding onto Mito without her knowing that this was going to be a wedding.
I mean, it's more of like an engagement party, but it's basically
right.
the same thing.
And then Vane changes her gender.
Yeah.
Mito is now
a dude. Yes. And this is where the reactive aspect of the show is, again, where she's not dynamic in that she is angry about it. She just accepts
it. She's upset about it. Like, she's not happy with it. But she's not, like, I don't know if there's a certain Stockholm syndrome going on here, but...
Sir Stockholm syndrome. This is where, if we're being generous to the show... Maybe there is a trans argument that could have been made for this show.
But at the same time, this is a gender change without consent.
Quick interruption. So, you were like, this is pretty heavy. Can you, like, tell us about something unheavy before you get back to this? Yes. So, this whole time, Mito has been wearing a wig. And so she's had long hair this whole show. But... when she transforms into a dude, she has short hair.
That's true.
But it doesn't feel like we really know if she does. Like, is it still a
wig? Like, does the wig
or
disappear?
Or is it determined that men... does the wig disappear? Or is it just that men have short hair? And that is a very weird argument to make. So if you've not seen Mito's design, she is a cutie. But this also is this really dumb thing about short-haired women hair cut in a certain way is very gendered. I mean, yeah, it exists everywhere. But like, her short hair she's still pretty cute from our world thing. I mean, I know this is probably like quintessential quintuplets where we are seeing what the anime wants us to see, but in the actual world, like all of the sisters. Have all the quints have the same hair color and don't have different hair color this whole time. So some of the plots, so some of the jokes are confusing to us because they all have different hair color to us, the viewer's point of view. So, and it's just really weird. Like, I'm like, what happened to her hair? And it's just so weird. I'm just really weird out by this. I'm really bothered by it because I think her hair is fine. Long, we don't really get to see her hair long, even though I think she likes her long hair. And it goes, I mean, this does go back to, because we almost forgot to talk about this, like, why was she wearing that wig the whole
time? It could just be that she finds it easy to navigate the world looking like that.
Yeah, and that's where this could have been an interesting type of trans story, in a way.
It's certainly about gender expression, like... how you choose to
about gender
express
expression,
your gender,
you're right.
And the fluidity in which you don't have to have the same gender from one day to the other. You can express yourself in different ways.
Yeah. I think it's a much better way of saying it. And you're like, but I think the show brought me down and made me forget about that is even
because the show, for a show so much about sexuality and gender and gender expression, is so heteronormative.
Yeah. It's to an obnoxious point. I mean, we have at times before she is forcibly transformed into a man. That, like, she has dressed up like a girl. And we've learned that she has met, Ruka in the past as a girl. And, like, she is okay expressing herself as a girl as well.
She's comfortable in both roles.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, pretty cool.
But it's the weird thing about the show... where it's constantly showing the fluidity of gender and sexuality and also saying the exact opposite. Like, the show is very complicated about sexuality, and yet the whole destined partner situation is so heteronormative.
It is super heteronormative, yeah.
The show tries to tell us that, hey, her hair is now actually short, not just a wig, because she's now a guy.
Yeah.
But the comet Vampire King himself has like luscious long hair and he's a guy. So
yeah,
it's yeah. already saying you don't need to have that type of aesthetic to be masculine. And yet it's also it's telling us that it actually is that way.
Mm-hmm. I think what's tough is that also it's also not a thing that we're trying to say. If you're going to talk about these issues, you should talk about these issues. But at the same time, I'm like, if that's what you want your story to be about, the fluidity of stuff, you don't make it in terms of like men are making the decision for
yes.
on women or like somebody's deciding your gender for you as a way of getting around the rules that now that you are not your woman self, you do not have your sex. Your sex is not female. That you are no longer the destined
partner.
Yeah. Because that was kind of his, that was kind of his strategy was to burn it to the ground. It's like, well, you can't be his destined partner if you're a dude. Because that's how this worked. And also, Ren, and that, well, I think some people might get distracted. I mean, I've really seen a lot of people talk about this. He's a bicon. And I'm like, I don't think he's a good bicon at all. Because he's just okay with whatever gender he decides she should be.
Yeah.
But he's also... It's like, I think your gender is fluid, but I'm forcing your sex to be something else. And there is another dubious aspect of it where because Ruka has met Mito in the past, Ren's dad uses his cat and makes the cat transform into Mito as a girl and says, this is your destined partner. And then the cat's like, hello, Ruka, it is I, that person you met. And in the past, I am your destined partner. And this is why we say Ruka's dumbest box rocks. He basically falls for it pretty easily.
I mean, I will say, if you, I wouldn't guess that somebody I thought was just a cis man was actually yeah. a woman the whole time. It's not like a natural thing to think. So like,
that's
like,
true.
Why
that
would
is true.
He... think that, oh no, that's such a Mito. And it's just like, oh no, that's that woman I met at one time, and then that's Mito.
I guess to say this really quick, because gender expression is, I mean, most of the time, this is something that's very important when we talk about gender expression and stuff, is that you don't really give a shit. Like, if somebody's dressed in a certain way, you're like, oh, that's a woman. Or a girl.
Yeah.
I guess for us to think that everybody knows that if you're sexually a man or a woman, you
yeah,
always
it's the
know.
Main it's reason why it's the construct is you don't go yeah. checking the genitals of everybody you meet or any one of all the chromosomes or whatever metric you wanted to use as a defining line. It's all kind of a blob of different traits that we then try to put into two boxes.
Isn't like when Mito transformed, she was gonna reveal that she was a woman, but like she had to take off a shirt or something, and then we see she
yes.
has no boobs.
Ruka.
Oh my god!
She thinks Ruka's about to find out and see her boobs, but turns out,
yeah.
I mean, she doesn't even have boobs.
There's other characters that are now going to start coming into the story that are also going to interrupt the story and the flow of the romance. And I'm like, wow, thank goodness we didn't have to watch any more. This idea that she had to hide her gender is very classic in these type of stories. Even though it's after a while, it's super there is basically no reason to hide your gender except to go to school.
Yeah, because she lives in Ruka's dorm, which is a boys' dorm.
Yeah.
And that's really the only reason now that she has to conceal her gender.
Is everybody in this dorm vampire now? That's still one of the greatest missed opportunities of the show. That's called Vampire Dormitory, that not everybody in this dormitory is a vampire.
That is true. Like, very few, actually. Yeah.
There's very few vampires. I mean, there's even, like, a place that she works at that we have other characters that we didn't even talk about, where there is a gay character who's in love with another character. And that's handled in a more delicate way. Still very sloppy, but much more delicate than the main plot of the story.
And speaking of work, since we had to bring this back to capitalism at Marxist Clover,
yeah.
Mito went to work the morning after her sex was forcibly changed. And
that's true.
I would argue that having your sex changed without your permission is grounds for an excused absence. Like, you should be able to take a day off for that.
And it's also like, she not only has to go to work the next day, she has to go to work the next day with the person that forcibly changed her sex.
Oh my gosh.
Too. And the show also doesn't hate Ren. I think that's the other big issue, is that maybe we should always advocate, like, you know, forgiveness. But I think Ren, if you asked him about anything he did, he'd be like, well, at least at the end of the day, I gave you up.
Yes.
And I let you go back to him.
The only redemptive thing that Ren does is respect Beto's wishes on who she chooses as a partner at the end. Which is a pretty low bar and probably not enough to redeem the horrible things he's done.
I think so. I mean, is it, you know, this might be a good place to bring in this. Like, is he compared to anything like the anime from this last season, like Dahlia, Blue, whatever that's called?
I think it's Dahlia in the Bloom.
Yeah, where when her person that she was engaged to basically said, I don't like that you have red hair, so you should change your hair color.
Yeah, that's just normal, toxic, masculine, patriarchal controlling of bodies, but it's...
I think there is a big argument here that what he's doing is like de facto version of that, where I don't know if he even is conscious of the fact that he is a monster in a way.
Yeah, I mean, that is how masculinity works, I guess.
That is true.
And maybe that is an interesting reading, that Ren thinks he's a good person, maybe in part because masculinity allows one to think that controlling actions are just normal and okay without really being aware of what you're doing.
Yeah, and there's also like a savior complex. You know, if Mito works for him, then he's saving her.
And I think Ren also wanted to protect Mito from becoming what his mom became. And it's, again, he didn't give Mito a choice in this, and he genuinely thought he was saving her by doing something that is objectively evil.
Yeah. It's baffling that a show, because like we may have talked about these characters, they're very boring characters. Mm-hmm. This is a very bad romance show. I am a lover of romance shows, and this isn't like some romance shows that have come out recently that I think are just very cute. And I'm like, I don't necessarily like the pure cute ones. I like my romance with a bit of drama at times. This is just a, like, at least those shows, like, the characters are not toxic people and are trying to become better people. This is a show where, I don't know, it somehow navigated itself into being a very bizarre, as we already said, gender, like, show about gender and sexuality and sex. In the weirdest possible way.
Yes, without actually understanding that it was doing it.
As it goes back, you know, let's go back to her getting fired at the beginning of the show. That's kind of the idea, is that it's weird to fire. Actually, you know what? It's men's generation. The show is all about the men and being there for the men. And whatever makes the men's life easier is the way. And that every character kind of exists in this way to alleviate the men thing. So the only real tangible conflict is when a gay character likes a hetero character. And that was the most compelling part of the show. Even though I didn't really enjoy it all that much, it was somewhat compelling.
It was kind of sloppily done, as you said.
It was very sloppily done, yeah.
I think that was a really enjoyable episode, Ingles.
I think so.
Thanks for talking with me about this. If any of you listening have a manifesto to send us, send it to marxistclover@gmail.com. And these are your hosts.
Don't forget to subscribe and comment.
We probably should say that, because that is the thing you're supposed to do for the algorithm gods.
Yes. So we're totally up for reviews. I don't know if we'll read them. I'm kidding. We will read them.
If we get any.
If we get any? That's true. Who will listen to this podcast? No one.
Well, signing off as our men's generation, this is Eric Sobsborn.
And Angles Next Door. Thank you so much.
Ohayou gozaimasu! Ora, ora.